Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back on the program Paul von Voorde. Today we're going to be speaking of his newly released book, Children of a Living Universe, Discovering Our Legacy Will Change Our Future. This is actually a revision of a previous book, Our Solarian Legacy, that I believe I had interviewed Paul on before. I certainly have read it before. And this is kind of the building blocks of some of his later work, which we have, if you look in the archives, we have interviewed Paul on other books that he's done, God's Genes and Consciousness, and other books that he's done. But essentially, today we're going to go back and talk about the Children of a Living Universe. The tenets of this book are based on the Hermetic principles and how they relate not just to the world around us, outside of us, but also to the inner world within us. Thanks, Paul, for joining us.
I'm delighted to be back with you.
Paul, give the listeners a little bit of your personal background and how you became interested in studying, a system for understanding all of these different worlds within and without.
Well, I started out as a very young person, very much devoted to fundamental religion, and so much so that I became ordained and had a And during my one of my graduate school periods, I pastored a small church outside of Tallahassee, Florida, when I was at Florida State University. So I was really just in the center of theology and belief systems, and of course, you know, being in that situation where I was having to give sermons about the theology of a particular fundamental, very fundamental religion, and yet I was learning things in my classes at the university that were challenging those principles that I was talking about from the pulpit, if you want to think of that sort of contradiction there.
Yeah.
And so I started like a lot of us, going into traditional occupations and so on. This was back in the Vietnam days, and I was challenged by John Kennedy, do what you can for your country. So I signed up for the officer candidate school for the Navy and became a naval officer, focusing on that sort of worldview from the military perspective. And then I was fortunate enough to be appointed by President Johnson back in those days as a U.S. diplomat in the Foreign Service, and spent a good number of years living abroad and getting a lot of challenges in terms of intercultural worldviews that bore down on my fundamental orientation that I started out with. Mm-hmm. And I began reading a lot of different books, and a lot of them were from the Hindu tradition, Lao Tzu, outside of the Western civilization perspective. And as I came back in Washington, D.C., I became very active in different study groups who were looking at different channeling the material, looking at some what we call new science. Numbers of people got together and started a new science, International New Science Association, back in the late 80s and early 90s. And that really gave me the impetus to start digging into what I thought were traditional principles that we had in our literature that we were ignoring. And I learned something about the Hermetic principles and got really stimulated by that, because it seemed to me to mirror in some way what was happening in physics and in biology and our physical sciences. And that's when I started actually working on some of the research for this book, and I've used that period many times in some of my other books on different topics. So I think what I was trying to do, I didn't know it at the time, this is looking back on myself, but I was trying to synthesize, pull together what I thought was solid history, not just myths, things like Hermes and the advanced being Thoth, and other areas of ancient knowledge that I thought was relevant to our modern science. And so this book is really the product of that effort to synthesize tradition in the past that, as you know, I think some of it came from advanced beings, not humans. But we had ignored that for centuries.
Right.
And so I wanted to talk about what's happening in modern sciences along with this, what we might call metaphysics from a traditional point of view. And I think it really, obviously, I feel that, you know, this is a good result, because I think we understand modern science right now if we go back and use the insights of this Hermetic tradition and other ancient documents that we have access to now. So that is enhancing, really, our understanding of modern science. And I would like to see establishment scientists actually delve into this material. I think they would have insights that would help move science on much more quickly, and particularly in physics. And I think also, too, in terms of neuroscience, in the sense of the notion, the idea that the universe is alive. It is a total living organism. And so that will give us another context for looking at the question between, you know, the physical brain and the mind of an individual, and then something that's bigger than the individual, this field of consciousness that I think is the fundamental part of our universe. It is the living, it is the self-actualizing its own impulse to develop new horizons, to take humans and all life forms in the universe to continue their development and creativity on this path of the universe that is going to become what it had the potential to become whenever it came into being. I'm sort of going around in circles there. Maybe I should just stop, because I see this, you know, but I see this unfolding of our human knowledge and history for the century that we're in. We've been going downhill for several decades in so many areas, and I think having this bigger picture will help us to see where we're going wrong in terms of our individual development and also in our social development.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we look back, there are some periods in history where we seem to have information and other even writings coming in that appear to be not able to be there from the traditional viewpoints. One such period is when the Hermetic principles were written down. These principles seem to be much wisdom beyond what would have been there historically from what we know. And the other period is the Sumerian tablets, and the information in that civilization appear to be way more advanced than the people could have had scientifically, mathematically, and in language. So these two areas, and I'm sure other ones that you found, are evidence that advanced beings may have been involved in these particular time periods, bringing in more universal principles and knowledge that we then, like you have in this book, use to as a framework for understanding what we know now.
I think that's right on the dot there, because those were periods where I like to call them, they were potential periods of great renaissance for humans. And the thing that troubles me, of course, and that is disturbing when we look at ourselves as humans, at that time where you had this advanced knowledge coming into human societies, they could be tribes or nations, like the Egyptians went through a period of high knowledge and understanding coming through one of their gods or one of their advanced being monitors. I don't think we can pin it down precisely, but we had this information, and it really brought a flash of new innovation and so on, and mm-hmm. in thought and government and so on. This goes back to Akhenaten, who wanted to, you know, get rid of this notion of worshiping sky gods and look at the universe as one conscious being. And mm-hmm. I think maybe Alexander the Great, I think he was one of these people who had the potential. He was collecting all of this information all around what we now call the Middle East and the countries that he touched, and was trying to pull together this material. But of course, he didn't last very long. And then the same forces that had brought down the Egyptians, and the same thing happened in India much earlier. And so we had the, you know, about 2,000 years ago, we had the destructions of the Alexandria Library and a lot of other libraries that had accumulated all this material. Mm-hmm. And so what did we see in history? At that point, we moved into the Dark Ages.
Right. Yeah, we did.
And then, you know, some of this came back out in the 16th, 17th century with what we call the Renaissance, but it was only mm-hmm. a half Renaissance, because it only dealt with physical mm-hmm. sciences, and we made a lot of progress in that area, but the sciences of the inner human, the aspect of consciousness, the whole concept of our humanity being part of a much larger community of conscious beings in the universe, those were suppressed by the oligarchs of the church and royal Christendom countries of that period. And so, you know, we've gotten only half of what we should have gotten out of that Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And we're still retarded in our social and cultural development, but also that is true in science, because we've just ignored the wisdom of these systems like the Hermetic ones that I focused on. And there are other people, you know, who've contributed to that. But we need to wake up a bit, a lot, really, because we have so much insight into the universe as a whole through these ancient traditions. And what I'm trying to do is to say, okay, put these together with what we're doing in physics and other disciplines today. And the notion that we have a universe that's based on information. It's based on principles. It's in other words, it's really a universe that is consciousness first, not after you have a physical process of evolution and then produce consciousness. It's consciousness that is the source. And once we have that concept, then our research can be very different. We are pushing through the veil to insights from all sources. I mean, other dimensions, historically, ancient traditions. And I think that we are making a little bit of progress in that in certain areas. But the establishment, when I say we're making progress, that means by individuals and a few people who get together with conferences and so on consciousness and on evolution and on other life forms. But the established institutions are still
incapable in the dark ages
of taking it in.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason for that, though.
Oh, of course.
You know, what I understand from what I've gathered is that this knowledge has always been with us, but for many, many millennia, it has been protected. Secret societies, you know, it's only there are guardians of this information. And this information probably came in from higher advanced beings. I mean, you know, we look at the Hermetic principles, which we'll discuss in a minute, but that probably came in from Hermes, who was an advanced being. But this knowledge is not something that you can just disseminate because of the potential abuse of this knowledge. I mean, that's why it's only been very recently that you can access this information. This information, by the way, can be accessed on the internet. I read not too long ago, in fact, my whole meditation group read a little booklet on the Hermetic principles that was very well explained and is critical information for understanding manifestation. So, you know, this information is just now becoming available to those seekers who are going after it. But I think the reason why this isn't in being taught in the schools and in the institutions is because we're not quite ready for it yet. There's still vast abuse of power, and this stuff would be incredibly abused, you know, were it common knowledge. So I think we have to develop as a people, as a civilization, to a more ethical and integrated and treating each other with respect rather than trying to, you know, have the indentured servitude model of, you know, the masters and the workers. I think that that's the problem, that we're not there yet, that where this can be brought out, you know, from the esoteric to the common, the common world.
No, so. I fully agree with what you're saying. I look at it a little bit different in the sense, and that maybe it's the same that you're articulating there, but it seems to me that we have oligarchic powers around the globe who really would like to have this kind of information not be well known by the total population. And so, because they are to manipulate the political process and the economic process by hanging on to these supernatural worldviews of most of the fundamentalist religions. So it has to be a reciprocating kind of process. Those of us who are interested in and trying to develop this material, we need to get it out to everyone. And we need to, at the same time, be looking at the science of the establishment and trying to see where we can have connections and sort of draw out that from the establishment. It's very difficult to do. I think I had mentioned to you one time that I went to a historical professional academic conference that was looking at what they call the big history. And since I had written books about the big picture, I was invited to make a presentation there. But when I started to try to open up some of this material, they were not ready for it. It was threatening to their worldviews and to their own materials that they were disseminating in the classrooms of universities and colleges and public media and so on. So somehow we need to try to work it both ways. And that's why I thought in this book that I would try to bring in part of in some of those chapters I have the scientific perspective in italics, and then I have normal lettering in discussing these traditional insights and principles, just to show that if you put them together in sort of a parallel flow of development, I'm hoping that it will stimulate people in the establishment at least to make these comparisons in their own research and their thinking. And it's interesting, I've had a couple of people that I was very surprised who are professors in universities who have read this material now, and they are interested in the insights that the Hermetic principles and some of the other things that we're talking about, it helps them to actually make progress in their own research. So I'm pretty pessimistic in the short term, but in the longer term, I see the seeds are being planted, and when people understand that these Hermetic principles help them design their own research models, I think that's going to be a very interesting period.
Well, that, I'll tell you how you know it'll change. You've got teenagers right now watching Ancient Aliens on you know your alternative television stations and reading your books like God's Genes and Consciousness, and these kids are going to go to college and they will become the professors. So you know, it's perfectly available to them. in all sorts of manner. I mean, it may not be taught in the schools yet, but they're going to be exposed to it irregardless, especially if they search for it on the internet. So all of that is available. It's available on TV. It's available on the internet. It's available in the bookstores. All they have to do is read or watch television or explore, and then that will be incorporated into their worldview as they go into college.
No,
so,
I
think
agree with
the
that.
Cat's out of the bag there. It really is. You know, they'll.
I think the reason that I'm sometimes my friends tell me, Paul, you're trying to put out this whole model in the way you talk about these things, and you don't get into some of the details that some other people talk about and focus on. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that we have to have both. We have to have people mm-hmm. who are specializing in particular parts of history, or
mm-hmm.
People who are developing books now on the areas of evidence to support the idea of more advanced beings, and that historical narrative is, I think that's moving in a very positive direction. But I think we need to understand that it's not just those aliens that we talk about on the television show. We
mm-hmm.
we need to somehow connect this this hermetic view and other principles that are part of the bigger picture, and
mm-hmm.
what we have is the battle now between not only religion with science, it's all of the religions, of course, fighting among themselves, as in
mm-hmm.
the Middle East at this point in time. And it's also, that's the case in the United States, because we have a progressive, expanding worldview of numbers of our denominations and religions. But on the other hand, we have the fundamentalists who have the wrong interpretation of this historical narrative, and
mm-hmm.
that produces the kind of behaviors and political policies and so on that are keeping us back. So we can't just talk about ancient aliens or hermetic principles
mm-hmm.
And the physics of getting off this planet. We have to talk about who are we as human beings in this universe. That we need to expand our self-image, that we're just not, physical products of a long period of evolution, and that we just finally got to the point 20 years ago that we are modern humans and we are the pinnacle of evolution. We need to think of ourselves as, and what I was trying to do in the book is that we're still children. We're
mm-hmm.
we're in the gimme stage where we want everything for ourselves. We see ourselves as the center of the universe,
mm-hmm.
and maybe we'll get to be in adolescence in a few years, decades, maybe a century or two, where we are beginning to look at ourselves, but also look at the ecosystems on this planet, all of the electromagnetic forces that are also interacting with our whole planet. All of these aspects are really always they were in one way or the other in these historical traditions, but we left them out, and we've got to create a new story, a new narrative of our role in this bigger picture. And that's what I was trying to accomplish in this book.
Right. You suggest in your book, too, that perhaps our development had been influenced by the advanced beings in that they established a more, you know, servitude role for humans in the distant past where we, you know, where we were, I guess, under their thumb, so to speak, and that then made us go forward with more the idea that we would always be in servitude to a higher force and perhaps not be able to take responsibility like we would have had that not have occurred. I think that's a very interesting idea. The idea that there are still royal families. I mean, there was a recent change of power in Spain, the royal family in Spain. So the idea of royalty is still persistent on the planet, and that idea may have come from advanced beings rather than inherently human civilization.
Well, I think that's right, and the powers at be for several thousand years were the institutions of kings and queens and their cohorts that are taking part in living that life on the basis of the servitude of most of the human beings in their areas.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had the institutions of the church where you had that same, and we're still in this to some degree, particularly in the Catholic Church, where you have a very heavy top-level hierarchy who are attempting to mold and shape the societies that they have power over. But what's happened is that the royalties and the religious leaderships are weakening, but what we have now are the oligarchs of the economic financial sector that really use these prejudices of the religions against each other and against secular society and so on. So that you have that process of manipulation going, so that we are not able to develop the educational institutions, the scientific research that ought to be getting support from our government and so on. So that imbalance is still there, and at some time in the future, we've got to get together in the people who are not in those oligarchic roles and in these other institutions of power and come together enough that we can have a real democratic society. We call our society democratic, but it's not at this point. Run like oligarchy.
Right. And it's true, you know, you're talking about the financial institutions, the corporations, the things that extend beyond countries. These are not these are multinational institutions that influence political, scientific, financial institutions and really, if it's not in their interest, it doesn't happen. Research, like just the thing I'm involved in, breast implants. I have the only book out on the true dangers of breast implants from a plastic surgery perspective, and my goodness, you know, God forbid that I ever publish, because that would just be something that they cannot allow to happen. So, and no money is given for research, and people who have published very damaging data have had it withdrawn from the journals it was published in after these institutions influence the editors of the journals. So we are still very much under the thumb of the powers that be that probably own these corporations and banking institutions. Things just do not get ever even investigated, even though, like in this case of breast implants, women are still being injured very much. They have life-threatening illnesses, increased rates of cancer, toxic poisonings, mold with the biotoxins growing inside their implants, and all of this is totally suppressed within the mainstream. Yeah. Totally. You won't see it on the evening news. You will see me on Monsters Inside Me demonstrating mold and breast implants. That's why I talk about the alternative media, which is, thank God for cable and for DirecTV and Netflix and all the things that are alternative to the mainstream media, because these allow, you know, voices outside of that.
Well, I think another area that I'm concerned about it is that in the Hermetic principles, of course, there is the implicit and explicit view that consciousness is the fundamental dimension of our universe. And yet all the neuroscience projects that we are funding and publicizing is coming from the other direction. What we're doing is looking at very small areas of our brain. We're looking at particular cells. We're looking at very precise impacts from one drug or the other, and then trying to extrapolate that into understanding about our human psychological problems, and you know, we are just filled with psychological problems in terms of all the violence and so on that we're producing, and so what I feel that needs to be done is that we need to go on the other side of that model and start with the notion that consciousness, beingness, is omniscient. It is there. And what happens is that we as individual physical beings, we have the limitations of our neural networks and so on to work through in our behaviors and our impulses and so on. And so if we were to begin to look at these problems from the point of view of the zeitgeist, of the fields of consciousness that have impact on the specific individual, and we then what we can do is have research looking at the conditioning that's done in the prefrontal cortex and its connection to the amygdala, which gives us our impulse of emotion connected to parts of our worldview and the way we take them positively or negatively. And it would give us a totally different model for dealing with the psychological problems that we're facing all around the planet. But to have that kind of research developed, we have to have some acceptance of this notion that not only are we humans interacting just one-on-one, that the whole group or the whole society is impacting on every individual, and that mm-hmm. our species is not alone in a airtight consciousness type bubble here on this planet, but that we have consciousness emanating elsewhere in the universe that also has an effect on us. And then when we talk about telepathy and we talk about precognition, all of these other things that we have made a lot of progress on in the last several decades, but we need to put those individual phenomena into this bigger model and begin to look outside of ourselves in an effort to look at ourselves from the inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, from my perspective in medicine, if you want to understand the miracles, the anomalies like spontaneous remission, you must understand that you cannot look at anything purely from a third-dimensional standpoint. I give the example of somebody with metastatic cancer who has a spontaneous remission. They have a energy at their crown that starts at their crown and goes through their body. They can feel it like a wave of energy, and by the time it reaches their feet, there is no more cancer in their body. Now, I've talked to Amit Goswami, I've talked to Miko Kichu, I've talked to the leaders on this radio show of physics, of philosophy, of different, you know, I've talked to people who are channeling higher level entities about this, and basically what it comes down to is you cannot, if that is true, and that has been demonstrated many times, that spontaneous remission, you cannot say that cancer originates in the third dimension. You see?
Mm-hmm.
It does not originate in the third dimension. It is a fourth-dimensional intrusion into the third dimension, and you have generational curses of cancer. You have spontaneous remissions. If you're going to understand cancer, you're going to have to understand it from a standpoint of explaining these anomalies within the greater science. And the only way to do that is multidimensional physics.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have been convinced that certain diseases that we fail to understand is because our framework is not large enough. And I'm sure that that's true of other things as well. I mean, medicine's my specialty, so that's what I concentrate on. But it is true of psychology. It is true of, you know, almost anything where you have anomalies that cannot be explained by traditional science.
Yeah.
So we have to, you know, we have information coming in from higher dimensions now. We have access to information from advanced beings, or whatever you want to call them, advanced consciousness, that will help us figure this out. And I, you know, for me, that's the way you do it. You don't do it in the scientific laboratory except to prove what principles are coming in. I mean, use our resources and then go to the lab after we understand. But these principles are like, look at the hermetic principles. They are, why don't you explain to the listening audience a little bit about where these came from and the kind of things that they're teaching us, because they're critical to understanding the world we live in.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I the name hermetic principles, you mentioned earlier Hermes, but I think it goes even farther back in history. The original source, it seems to me, to be Thoth, who was an Egyptian leader at some particular time, probably prior to the cataclysm of about 11,500 years ago, because at that time, Egypt was a thriving culture under the control or the general supervision of more advanced beings, maybe perhaps in Atlantis or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the principles were then passed on from the Egyptians to the Greeks, and that's where we have the Hermes name attached to this. But it's the same being, a historical one who provided mm-hmm. this information and these insights. So let's just take one of them, one that mm-hmm. is very important for me. It's called the principle of correspondence,
right.
which we've all heard described as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one that finally physicists have gotten to the point of understanding that if you are dealing with an atom here and you're going to do some research with other particles, and if you're going to go beyond the particles and look at the energetic aspects or the electromagnetic aspects, that you're going to have the same principle acting at these different levels. Well, the same thing happens in terms of our consciousness. If one level of consciousness has something going on with it, positive or negative, then it's going to activate different levels. And what you were describing with your cancer problem coming from the outside of the fourth dimension or beyond, then we see that acting at the physical level, at the energetic level, and at the level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So this principle, and in the book there I've got all kinds of examples,
mm-hmm.
but what we understand then is that there is this connection. And so if we have physical problems in this dimension that we're functioning in at the moment, and you have this negative energy coming from someplace else, some other dimension, then it goes mm-hmm. down at each level in the same negative impulse are the constructive impulse. And so the principle of correspondence is really one of those keys.
Mm-hmm.
But another one, which is, these sound so simple that it's surprising that, you know, we humans hadn't figured it out. But it's the principle of rhythm. You have
mm-hmm.
everything has cycles, and of course in our physical sciences, we've now come to understand that everything is in cyclical form. And
mm-hmm.
so when something is happening today, we understand that it's going into the future, either going up or down.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that stays in a particular line, and that's what
right.
we're talking about, the Renaissance and those periods in history that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Those were high periods, you might say, sort of at the top of the curve. And
mm-hmm.
then after that, because of internecine wars, our physical, geophysical calamities, then you had a decline. And
mm-hmm.
so everything that we're doing, from our own individual health to social institutions, I mean,
mm-hmm.
We see in our own country, the United States, you know, we were really moving up to that peak after World War II, and now we're
moving down.
Moving down.
We may not be a superpower much longer.
Yeah,
it's called biorhythms, you know, which were popular in the 80s, yeah. The idea, there were scientific studies done showing that the biorhythm of the patient and the surgeon were both important in determining the outcome of the operation.
Now, did you, when you talk about the patient and the surgeon, are those rhythms, is the outcome much more positive if there is the simultaneous kind of rhythm between the two people?
I mean, I don't remember the studies well enough to talk to that specificity, but they're available. I mean, I'm sure you can look them up. There were a number of studies done, and the main gist of it is that the biorhythms were correlated with complications and things like that. That, I mean, I'm sure, you know, that when I am at my low point, I don't have all my complications because the patient's biorhythm is also involved. But maybe when we simultaneously are at a low point, in the physical especially, there could be a complication.
So that kind of information or understanding that we have, that suggests that what we need to do is to be aware of our own rhythms and try to match with other people if we're going to have a certain outcome, right? And that's why I think in our politics in the country today, we don't have any of that. And with the, let's just take a Congress right now. The individuals who are the members there in the Senate and the House, they never now get together and resonate with each other at a social level, at a just a human level.
Right.
And they're not even able then to have an intellectual resonance. And so that when institutions get to that level, we're not going to have anything constructive to come out of it.
Right. Well, we're at a low point. I mean, we know that we're at a low point. We're losing influence. We're losing power. We're disorganized. We're incongruent. I mean, you see that not just in politics, but in science. I mean, we're about to emerge into another whole thing, I think. I mean,
I think the
disintegration of everything is a good thing because it's not working, and we need a different whole thing, which I think people need to read your book, Children of a Living Universe, because this is part of the answer of what's coming out. So that's my opinion anyway. we're coming up to the end of our hour, Paul. Would you like to give your contact information?
Yes. My website is just www.vonward, V like in Victor, onward.com. And that is my website, and my email is also easy to remember. It's just paul@vonward.com. And I'm happy to communicate with anyone who wants to follow up on any of these questions and issues we've talked about.
And I do want to let people know that this is a very important book in terms of, you know, I've been doing this radio show now for 17 years, talking to a different author every week. Much of what I'm trying to bring out with the radio show is very well articulated in this book, and especially, as Paul was saying before, how this is so important at this time to understand these guiding principles and understand how to put everything together so that we can affect a better world, one with less suffering, one with less dishonesty, one with greater cooperation, and just get things straightened out so that we don't destroy the planet or have the planet kick us off if we really believe we have a living universe. You know, if we're doing enough damage, the exterminators will come in. So it's a very important book, and I encourage you all to read it.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All righty, Paul. Well, we'll get I'll have my staff contact you about doing noetic science. Paul lives close to me, so he can come and share this with the noetic science group. And we will be back next week with NamNews Invocation. This is a musician, K. Taliana, who has a spiritual perspective that she'll share with us. Thanks again, Paul. Look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.